Highland Falls, El Paso, Clarksville, Watertown, and from other important military capitals around the globe, Eye on Defense brings the top military and defense issues into focus. Eye on Defense is proudly sponsored by Big Sarge Pre-Owned TA-50 Emporium and The Last Hope Jewelry and Pawn. And now, citizens of Earth, brace yourselves for the next episode of Eye on Defense. Defense, 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 defense.
All right, we're back, everybody. This is episode 243, and this is 16 March. Another short episode. I don't know, maybe 20 minutes. Only six stories. Good one on NATO spending. That's a good one. And then one, oh, the Navy budget. I think when we get done with this one, this episode will have hit all of them. Army, Air Force, we did Marine Corps yesterday, I think. And then Navy, as promised, in this episode. Space Force, I don't know. I can't get excited about the Space Force. I know it's, anyway, I don't think I'll do the Space Force. So we'll start off with CENTCOM X, 16 March, Red Sea update, 16 March between 7:50 a.m. and 8:15 a.m. local time. Iran-backed Houthis launched two unmanned aerial vehicles from Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen toward the Red Sea, two UAVs. U.S. CENTCOM forces successfully engaged and destroyed one UAV, and the others presumed to have crashed in the Red Sea. There are no reports of damage or injuries to ships in the vicinity. And then later that evening, local time, between 9 p.m. and 10:30 p.m., CENTCOM destroyed five unmanned service vessels and one UAV in Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen in self-defense. So that's the latest update from the Red Sea. Moving on. This is an interesting story from Times of Israel. Michael Horowitz, today, 16 March, Israel said to complain of slowdown in U.S. arms deliveries among growing rift. What if you'd heard about this? So the United States has slowed its pace of military aid to Israel compared to the beginning of the war, according to a report, quoting an Israeli official on Friday. American officials have denied this. As ties between the Biden administration and Israel become increasingly strained over their humanitarian crisis in Gaza, the unnamed senior Israeli official told ABC News that supply shipments were coming very fast when the war erupted at 7 October, but now we are finding that it's very slow. That's a quote. The official said Israel is running out of 155mm artillery shells as well as 120mm tank shells. The official also said it required sensitive guidance equipment. So if you've got 155mm, you better hang on to it because it's the whole world needs 155mm ammunition. Of course, 120mm tank round. Moving on. According to the officials, not clear what's causing the slowdown. The IDF has refused to comment on the report. U.S. officials have told the network, assuming ABC, that there is no deliberate delay in aid shipments and no policies have changed. Both Israeli and U.S. officials acknowledge American frustrations with the war and the mounting death toll in Gaza, the report said. But U.S. officials said the White House has not signed off on any decision to lever military support to pressure Israel to do more to protect civilians. U.S. officials said rather than a slowdown, the administration was considering increasing aid to encourage Israel to do more to prevent innocent deaths. And here's John Kirby, White House National Security Spokesman. Quote, I'm not going to get into the timeline for every individual system that's being provided, White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby told ABC when asked for comment. Quote, we continue to support Israel and their self-defense needs. That's not going to change, and we've been very, very direct about that. End of quotes. Obviously not in the article, but is it me or is John Kirby give the impression that he's kind of a weasel? I'm not trying to get personal here, and I'm not trying to offend weasels that are out there. It's just, he seems very slippery to me. I don't know. And to be fair, let's be fair here. His quote, he says, I'm not going to get in every timeline for every individual system that's being provided. But that's what the administration did with Ukraine and has done with Ukraine. Every time they send something to Ukraine or commit something to Ukraine, they do a DOD release, and then it's in all the papers, and they do an announcement. They have the Ukraine Defense Security Contact Group. They do it every month, or blah, blah, blah. So to be fair, you have been doing it for Ukraine. just to be fair. Moving on. U.S. officials told Politico earlier the week that U.S. President Joe Biden would consider placing conditions on future military aid to Israel if the military moves ahead with a planned offensive in Rafah, which we've been following. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan on Tuesday appeared to deny the report that President Biden was mulling such a measure. And here's a quote from the National Security Advisor from Tuesday. "We're not going to engage in hypotheticals about what comes down the line, and the reports that purport to describe the president's thinking are uninformed speculation." Uninformed speculation. I'm stealing that, and I got to use that one. Moving on. Gaps continue to grow in U.S.-Israel ties this week when Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer on Thursday called for Israel to hold new elections, saying he believed that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had, quote, lost his way and was an obstacle to peace in the region. In response to the speech, Prime Minister Netanyahu's Likud party laid into the center, saying Israel, quote, Senator, quote, "Israel is an independent and proud democracy that elected Prime Minister Netanyahu, not a banana republic." Minister Benny Gantz said Schumer's comments were inappropriate. Opposition leader Yair Lapid saw it as further proof of a growing rift under Netanyahu in the relations between Israel and the United States. President Biden later said Schumer made a good speech, quote, and expressed serious concerns not only shared by him, but by many Americans. And that's it. I'll stop there. That's the end of the article, pretty much. All right, next we'll go to NATO. Lee Farron, Breaking Defense, 15 March. Good article here. NATO, I guess they do an annual report where they pat themselves on the back. No change there. They pat themselves on the back here. NATO lauds unprecedented jump and defense spending, new members, and public popularity. Pardon me. I'm going to drink some water real quick. Feeling a little under the weather. All right, moving on. Poland in particular led the way in defense expenditure in 2023, which we talked about many times on this program, using nearly 4% of GDP on arms spending spree, according to the alliance's annual report. NATO Thursday released its annual report in which it says 2023 was a challenging but successful year, highlighting a rise in defense spending by members. The historic accession of Finland just days ago by Sweden, so Finland then Sweden, and what NATO Chief Jens Stoltenberg called extremely strong public support for the alliance in face of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. After years of goading members to spending 2% of their gross domestic product on defense, Stoltenberg said Thursday that two-thirds of NATO members are expected to hit that goal in 2024. And there's a chart that shows 11 members at 2% or above for 2023, which I'll get to in just a second. Adding in Canada to European numbers, NATO said that defense spending has risen by an unprecedented 11%. Poland has led the way with 4% of their GDP, even greater percentage than the United States. So let's talk about that real quick. There are 32 members. Who's meeting the 2%? Let's see if I can read this chart. Poland, of course, the United States, Greece, Estonia, Lithuania, Finland, Latvia, United Kingdom, Hungary, for all the heat Hungary takes, they're spending their 2%, Slovak Republic, and Denmark, who is not meeting their 2%. France, Bulgaria, Norway, Croatia, Albania, North Macedonia, Germany, that's a surprise, Germany, Netherlands, another surprise, Romania, Turkey, kind of a surprise, Montenegro, Czechia, Portugal, Italy, kind of a surprise, Slovenia, Canada, España, Spain, Belgium, and Luxembourg, according to the chart. Both Finland and, okay, I'm back to the article now, both Finland and Sweden applied for alliance membership in 2022. Helsinki was welcomed in April of 2023. And, of course, Sweden joined NATO just a few weeks ago, right? And they are the 32nd country. So there's another handy chart here. 1949 is the NATO treaty was signed. I don't know all these countries. United States, Canada, it's like West Germany, UK. 1952, NATO expanded, including Greece, Turkey. 1955, Germany joins NATO. Oh, I'm sorry, that must be, I apologize. Germany doesn't join NATO until 1955. Probably West Germany, right? 1982, Spain joins NATO. 1990, Germany's reunified and they're both in NATO. 1999, Czechia, Hungary, and Poland joined NATO. 2004, Bulgaria, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Romania, Slovakia, Slovenia joined NATO. 2009, Albania, Croatia joined NATO. 2017, Montenegro joins NATO. 2020, North Macedonia joins NATO. And of course, you know who just joined. Moving on. Stoltenberg may have lauded the increase in defense spending by non-U.S. members last year, but the United States is still responsible for NATO defense expenditure, 67% that United States gives for NATO. Elsewhere in his remarks, Stoltenberg said that the alliance has been met with a critical moment in regard to support for Ukraine. He noted that in 2013, I think that's a misprint, it should be 2023, for the first time a number of allies sent long-range systems, UK Storm Shadow, French Scout missiles, and the allies agreed to send F-16 aircraft. The report reiterated NATO's position that Ukraine should be a member, even if officials have been wary of giving a public timeline for the move. Until then, the report calls for more assistance to Ukraine and more defense expenditure for members into 2024 and beyond. So that's a pretty good article there. Moving on. Here's a French story. France's naval group won $6 billion Dutch submarine project. So Netherlands is building submarines. Four of them, I think. Yep, four submarines. I'm going to cough here. Excuse me. Drink some water. Stand by. And then there's a French company that's building them. So the Netherlands has fixed France's naval group to build four attack submarines in a project worth 5.65 billion euro, beating offers from Germany's ThyssenKrupp Marine Systems and Sweden's Saab in cooperation with Dutch shipbuilder Damen. Naval Group will provide a conventionally powered version of its Barracuda submarine to replace the Royal Netherlands Navy's four Walrus-class attack submarines, the first of which the service retired in October. The French shipbuilder will be asked to deliver the first two vessels within 10 years of signing the contract. The Netherlands embarked on a spending spree to replace its major naval combatants, and in addition to the submarines, it plans to start construction of more than 20 surface vessels in the next decade for an investment of more than 11 billion euro. About these submarines, the delivery contract will be signed after the tender assessment undergoes debate in Parliament. The government has faced some criticism for the potential choice of Naval Group, French Naval Group, with some lawmakers saying the company would favor French jobs over the Dutch naval construction industry. The choice of Naval Group will... Here's a statement from a French-Dutch partnership which will accompany the program over the long term and help strengthen bilateral defense cooperation. Here's their statement from the French government. The choice of Naval Group will provide the Netherlands with ocean-going submarines of the highest global standards, the French government said in a statement. France operates a nuclear-powered version of the Barracuda class, and in 2020, France estimated the cost of the program to build and operate six submarines in this class is 10.4 billion euro. The Netherlands' new four submarines will represent a considerable improvement in design, and the ability to launch cruise missiles will substantially increase striking power, according to the ministry. The Netherlands plans to equip these new sub with RTXs, formerly Raytheons, Tomahawk cruise missiles for a maritime strike capacity, something that the Walrus class lacks. The new submarine will carry torpedoes, and they will be suitable for special forces operations. The vessels will be better suited for intelligence gathering due to improved sensors. While the modern battery technology will give them greater energy capacity than the Walrus class, and therefore allow them to remain submerged for longer, according to the ministry. And here's the names of them, very cool names. New vessels are called Orca. I'm not going to use the Dutch terms, I'm going to use the English terms. Orca, Barracuda, and Tiger Shark. Oh, and Swordfish. So Orca, Swordfish, Barracuda, and Tiger Shark. Very nice. The country is targeting delivery of the first sub in third quarter of 2033. The final vessel delivered in third quarter of 2037. Very helpful putting that in, Mr. Rutenberg. So that's 9 years away for the first sub. And then 4 years. So I guess I'm not going to do the math. All right, next UK story from Defense Post, Joe Sabala, 15 March, UK troops, a major warfighting experiment. This is officially our first Project Convergence 2024 story. I think last year we did six. This year we haven't done any, so now we're doing one. UK troops, a major experiment, warfighting experiment. Hundreds of British soldiers are currently in the United States, California, to participate in a major warfighting experiment in preparation for future of warfare. Part of Project Convergence Capstone 4, the event will help define how UK troops can effectively fight in multi-domain battle space. According to the service, the experiment involves using cutting-edge platforms such as drones and autonomous vehicles equipped with machine guns to win on future battlefields. Some of the technologies are also reportedly deployed for the first time on the ground to help to shape the British Army of 2030. In addition to autonomous platforms, a warfighting experiment deploys a network of information systems to assess its role on the modern battlefield. British Army acknowledged the vast amount of data present in today's warfare and the potential danger of being unable to process them properly. There's a quote from the British Army: if the vast amounts of data flying around are not properly processed, commanders cannot make sense of the battlefield or make decisions needed to defeat the enemy. According to one participant, the experiment has so far allowed military units to effectively move data for the first time in an operational scenario and at a magnitude never seen before. The British Army has sent its first Deep Recce Strike Brigade Combat Team, 1DRS BCT, to lead its contingent in the warfighting experiment in California. The experiment will run through March 20. The assumption is it's in NTC, Fort Irwin. What am I doing on time? It doesn't matter. Last story, Navy budget. Breaking Defense, Justin Katz, 11 March. Navy's new budget request would retire 10 ships early, but buy only six. So procure six, retire 10. Navy brass and lawmakers go back and forth every year about ship retirements. This year looks like it will be no different. The U.S. Navy's fiscal FY25 budget request seeks to procure six new battle force ships while divesting of a 10, a move that is sure to raise alarms and complaints in Congress. The Navy and Marine Corps share of the budget is $257.6 billion, $203 billion for the Navy and $53.7 billion for the Marine Corps. It's an increase of 0.07 increase over last year. We already talked about the Marine Corps yesterday, I think. The six proposed ship buys, here's the procurements, right? They include one Virginia-class submarine, two Arleigh Burke-class destroyers, one Constellation-class frigate, and one San Antonio-class amphibious transport dock. And the first medium landing ship, remember we talked about those two yesterday. The 10 ships being retired early include two cruisers, one dock landing ship, four expeditionary fast transports, one expeditionary sea base, and two littoral combat ships. This is something I learned. The Navy routinely retires ships every year when they reach the end of their predetermined service lives, but the Navy must seek permission from lawmakers to divest a warship. Pentagon lingo for implying the ship would leave the fleet earlier than planned. So once you use the word divest instead of retirement, that raises a red flag. I've heard that before, and I never knew why, but now I know why. I learned something here. Moving on. One way the Navy may try to forestall criticism is by pointing out the shipbuilding budget is relatively flat, slightly down to $32.4 billion from last year's request of $32.8 billion. But that is unlikely to matter on Capitol Hill, where divestments, not retirements, have proven to be a contentious topic between Navy officials and lawmakers every year. The Pentagon argues those ships that are being divested are expensive to maintain, that the money would be spent on advancing future technologies. Just like the Air Force went through all that for many years with the A-10. For many lawmakers, though, increasing the Navy's overall fleet size, for better or for worse, has become a priority. The service's ship count is constantly in flux depending on the annual retirement schedule and commissioning ceremonies, but the fleet is currently at 292 ships, a far cry from the legal mandate set by Congress for 355. I learned something there. So Congress mandate says 355 ships in the Navy, they got 292. Elsewhere in the shipbuilding budget, the service has updated its long-term shipbuilding plan to include the 31 amphibious ship fleet that lawmakers previously mandated. So we talked about that. They're on, they know they got to do it, and they're going to do it. I think the new CNO said she was going to do it. The service said the fifth Ford-class aircraft carrier CVN-A2, which was previously planned for purchase in 2028, is now scheduled to be put under contract in 2030. So there's a delay in the new carrier. On the undersea warfare side, the undersecretary was enthusiastic with reporters about significant investment in new budget, including $3.9 billion invested in the submarine industrial base in 2025. And a total of $11.1 billion across the five-year period known as the Future Years Defense Program. A little bit about submarines here. The choice to fund only one Virginia-class submarine in FY25 is a cut from the previously planned two boats. It's argued that despite the cut, the new budget maintains the other projected nine submarines, as well as necessary advanced procurement funding to keep the submarine industrial base well-positioned to support both the U.S. Navy and the AUKUS Security Pact. Almost done. They touched on the Marines just a little bit, because we didn't talk about this yesterday. We'll talk about it today. For the Marine Corps, the new budget will procure the 30-millimeter variant of the amphibious combat vehicle and will continue to invest in the medium-range intercept capability launchers and missiles, as well as sustained funding for the GATOR radar, which means ground-air task-oriented radar. For Marine Corps Aviation, the service is seeking permission to start a two-year block buy of CH-53K heavy-lift helicopters, as well as five-year multi-year procurement for associated engines. And that's it, sports fans. 243 is done in the books. 21 minutes, short episode. And that's it. 243 in the books. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.